I am Anna Rose E. Epstein and my co-host.
Hi, I'm Hannah. Welcome to As It Is, Like It Was,
a podcast dedicated to the artists around the world. Before we begin, a note on our content.
As It Is, Like It Was is created for adult audiences only and may include graphic descriptions of violence, abuse, addiction, and trauma, discussion of sexuality and gender, discussion of mental illness and existential struggle, and some very filthy language.
The views, information, or opinions expressed during As It Is, Like It Was are solely those of the individuals involved and do not necessarily represent those of Nothing Without a Company.
As It Is, Like It Was is sponsored by you, our listeners.
This is our third episode, airing live on Thursday, May 13th, with guests LaRose Washington and Kevin Sparrow. Enjoy the show.
One of our two guests today is LaRose Washington. LaRose is a Chicago-based actor, writer, and producer. She is also the box office manager for Nothing Without a Company. Recently, LaRose has performed in Where the Air Meets the Water, a live play for one audience member, as well as performing and writing sketch comedy with her LA-based troupe, Trifecta Comedy.
Our guest today is also Kevin Sparrow. Kevin is a Chicago-based playwright, dramaturg, and performer, and the literary manager for Nothing Without a Company. They recently premiered the interactive online experience of the Kingdom of Slavinalia in January 2021 as part of their ongoing performance project with the Museum of Unnatural History in Chicago. So, LaRose and Kevin, welcome.
Thanks for having us.
So good to see both of your faces again. You're part of the 24-hour fest, but that was like
Time we saw them was at the 24.
Yeah.
And we were all very
sad. I was in Kevin's play.
Yes.
Right. Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
Oh, that was so fun. How was it working together?
Good.
Again, I like technically this is the second play in a 24-hour fest that I did that Kevin wrote, and it was so much fun.
Yeah. That's awesome. Yeah, through the pandemic, I went through this phase, like right as the pandemic started, I was like, oh, I'm going to be like super productive and I'm going to Marie Kondo my house. And I'm going to write 50 scripts and everything's going to be great. I wrote one script, effectively killed our laundry monster, but that one's, it's back now.
It's true.
And I was like, oh.
Yeah. Yeah, I kind of was the same way. I was like, no, actually, it was kind of the opposite way. I was like, well, I don't want to do anything. I just want to like see how the world handles this as I try to handle myself in the world. What about y'all? How was it for you at first? Because it's been 14 months. LaRose, you see.
Yeah, do you want to take that one?
Yeah, I don't know if Kevin was going to say something. So
I don't know.
I was also in Hannah's boat where I started the pandemic and I was like, oh yeah, I'm going to read a bunch of books because, oh, I haven't read in so long. And then I'm going to do like, there was a whole bunch of like acting challenges happening where it's like, ooh, perform a monologue once a week or once a day, put tape on yourself because it's self-tape. Yeah, I did that for about 3 days. And then I was like, very done. So yeah, the beginning of the pandemic was like, yeah, I'm definitely going to do all the things. And then most of the things that I set out to do, I definitely didn't do.
Right. Yeah, that was such an interesting start of it, of trying to fill in a gap of like, okay, if I can't make my life in the outside world, I'm going to create what I would want to create if I had that time. But that all falls apart, right? And I was like, oh, I'm going to read books. I'm going to do all this other stuff that I've been meaning to get involved in. And then that fell by the wayside. But I've gotten into reading again, like in the second half of this year. So I've been reading a lot, which is lovely because that's one of my favorite things to do.
Me too, actually. I read three books in the last few months. I haven't read three books since I was in like high school and I had to read books.
And just getting into that headspace, I don't know, something about it is easier when you're not in the world like that, right? You don't have to go out and like separate yourself from the book. So in some cases I've been more attached to certain books, which can be a good or bad thing depending on how emotionally investing they are. And then I think a lot of the plans around doing work online, creative work online, has been shifting, right? And so it was good early on to experiment with things though, and to see how other people were working with this format, particularly through Zoom, but there's other online formats to work with. So I got the chance to kind of join a exquisite corpse writing thing where we were just kind of worked on a script together and would just follow up with other people's writings as we went along. So that one, that was a fun kind of challenge of just like collaborate with some people. They could be from anywhere across the country. And
yeah, from the title of it. Yeah, it felt like from the title of it, like y'all were going to be writing on bodies somehow.
Oh,
because of the corpse thing.
Yes.
I took a very dark turn in my head.
I didn't know what to think. I was confused. So,
oh,
yeah.
Exquisite. Should we talk about what exquisite corpse is?
Great. Yeah.
So this is part of the surrealist movement of art. But where you would take like a drawing, someone draws the top half of one thing and you fold the paper over and you only see the like lines, and you have to continue the drawing, fold it over again, and then the third person draws the bottom part of it. So you don't see what the full picture looks like until you do it together.
Oh, wow.
And this took that format, but just with writing or scripting.
So it would be like you would only see the last sentence someone wrote and then you continued. Wow.
Or the last two or three lines of the scene. And then continue on with another scene. And you could write as much as you want. I think that was the nice freeing thing, is that there wasn't like a restraint on like everyone writes 10 pages or does this thing. It was just like, you can write as much or as little as you want and just keep going with that.
Reminds me of like a game, Hannah, I think you were playing with our friend's kid who's 5, and it's, you know, you talk story, you say a sentence and try to like develop a story together. But since you're working with a child, you go sentence by sentence. Or even the telephone game, except in telephone, you don't necessarily hear what everybody said, which that would be really interesting if you did, if you could go back and hear what everyone's interpretation of what they heard was.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah, that would be fun.
LaRose, did you, I know you're, we've done Zumba with you and we really miss it so much. It was one of the self-care stuff that we used to do before a pandemic, and we've had to figure out some other things instead, but have you been keeping up with that? Tell us about your self-care in that way.
Oh my goodness. My self-care by the way of fitness has depleted so bad during the pandemic. I think just because like, generally like being in one space, like I think throughout this time I've realized how outdoorsy I am, and not necessarily like, oh, like I want to go out and talk to people all the time, but like just being outside. So, and I realized a lot of my fitness is connected to that, because I'm a huge hiker, like I love hiking a lot, and like I stopped doing that at least toward the beginning of the pandemic, and then later on I started doing it again.
We weren't sure if we were allowed to, so that makes sense.
Yeah, right. In like being like safe, and then like also out people out in the woods are like, yeah, it's totally fine, I'm just not gonna wear masks, like very early on. So I was like, nah, I'm not gonna mess with that.
Yeah.
So I feel like by the way of self-care fitness wise I'm just now getting back into it, where I feel like for me it was carbs for the first like half of the pandemic, and then now I'm like, okay, put the carbs down, let's go back to what I was doing beforehand. Yeah,
did you get into the whole baking thing like everybody else?
No, I'm a terrible baker. I am really bad at baking. Like I love cooking, me and cooking get along very, very well. So yes, I've cooked a lot. And I've tried some new soups along the way of like of the pandemic, but like baking.
Is this a measuring type thing?
Yeah.
Yeah, that gets me too.
Where I'm like, I've grown up cooking at like, oh yeah, you need a pinch. And that's a pinch, you know? Or like, this is also audio, like 7 shakes is a pinch. Where like I didn't learn like, oh yay, measure this out. I don't think I have the patience for that. I'm like,
or you just like to experiment. You don't like being told what to do. That's how I like to think about it.
It's hard to experiment in baking because it becomes very inedible and difficult to.
Yeah, our friend Todd has, he loves to bake and he has got a scale. So I guess you'd like have to weigh things out sometimes, which is very confusing to me because I'm like, isn't a measuring cup liquid or dry stuff? And he's like, no, there's a difference.
So, and especially if you're using butter.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Really?
Yeah. Because, you know, when you buy sticks of butter, they show you, they tell you like how many tablespoons or whatever. But if you don't buy the stick, then you have to figure out a way to know how much butter it is. So that's why you got to weigh it.
This might also be why I'm bad at baking, because I never knew you weighed things.
I didn't get into the whole baking thing as far as what everybody else was doing, because I can't eat flour and like a lot of the other stuff that you need for baking. So I've been trying to experiment with playing with almond flour, but it doesn't have the same consistency. So
have you ventured toward coconut flour?
Yeah, I do coconut flour, but I don't love the taste of it all the time. Like, I don't want everything to taste like coconut all the time. And I have to use coconut oil for a lot of things. So
right.
Do you prefer coconut flour?
I do. There's something about like, almonds that are not almonds, so like almond butter or like almond flour, like there's a grit to it, and I'm not a fan of gritty food, so I was like, so then I switched to like coconut flour because I'm all about that. It's smoother.
What are other gritty foods that you don't like? I'm curious.
Oh, like grits? Yeah. I'm trying to think of, okay, so whey protein powder for a very long time would not do that,
because
it does like this thing, like it feels like you're like rubbing small grains,
like you're eating chalk.
So that, what else is gritty that I can think of?
You would hate my vitamin C chewables. Those are very much that. I almost like dusty.
yeah most chewable like pills can't do those, because those are gritty. I'm like,
I don't like chewables either. I gotta swallow them.
Yeah. There's something about that texture that freaks me out. I don't know why.
Do y'all take vitamins? Are you like vitamin takers? Is that something, self-care stuff that you do?
No, I should.
It's D and C. That's it.
D. Yeah. I'm D, iron, and C as well. Yeah.
Especially D in the winters, because that's connected to depression. If we have a lack of it, super important. I take so many vitamins. Oh my goodness. A lot of turmeric too.
Turmeric is great. I've heard, like, I feel like I take bouts of turmeric, but I don't do it often enough to be like, yeah, I take turmeric. I'm also trying to figure out
with turmeric. You can dye things with turmeric, because that yellow color will dye stuff. So like if I have a tea towel that's like going, but I love it so much and I need to color it somehow, turmeric works really well for that. And like turmeric and coffee combo works nice.
Noted. Good.
Where all my turmeric's been going.
Yeah, that's something that I haven't heard a lot about, of like people dying. We hear about all the baking. We hear about all these kind of activities. What about dyeing? What about homemade dyes and learning how to dye fabrics? That did not take off, but I'm very curious about it now that Hannah's raised the point.
Yeah, there was like a tie-dye thing. One of our friends, Patty and Joe, they're a couple, they were doing like this tie-dye thing for a while through the pandemic. And we were good friends with them through the summer of the pandemic, because we were both raising caterpillars like into households, and we would go to their garden and get caterpillar food, bring it back to our caterpillars, and then all of a sudden we had like a couple more caterpillars because there were eggs on it. We didn't realize.
Oh wow!
The eggs are like microscopic. They're so small. Are they really? Yeah, they're so small. But then, like within days, they've moved, and you're like, "Wait a minute! There was a small little thing there, and now it's moved." And then just within like what, 3 weeks, they're butterflies.
They're butterflies, yeah.
Oh, wow, that's super fast.
But keep your cats away from them.
Yeah, our Xander cat did eat one of our 9 that we raised, and it was my fault. I left it in the thing and I didn't cover it, and we went out to dinner and I was like, oh, we're gonna be gone to our friend's house for a couple of hours, it'll be fine.
They were free range.
The cats eating. Are asleep. No. Oh, we came home and there was no caterpillar.
It was very juicy at that point too. It was like a juicy, like yummy looking food.
Oh,
for Xander. I thought it was tempting myself, so Xander probably did too.
Yeah, and why not?
I will say 1 out of 9 is not too bad though. It's not bad odds. Right. Yeah. So
Kev, I keep remembering like that you were really into fruit, because you had like that whole fruit. Experimental fruit thing going. Like, what's your favorite fruit, and like, can you tell us about that experiment that you were doing with all your fruit?
Oh gosh, this is so challenging. Like, how do you land on one specific fruit? They're all really great. Every single fruit that has ever been in existence is amazing.
Except for tomatoes. I don't like tomatoes.
Yeah, tomatoes are. I just categorize them as a vegetable just so that I don't have to think about them.
Good idea.
Even though that's anti-scientific or whatever. Apples. I still love apples. I'm sure you've seen it in many places. And like the experiment with those kind of in my solo performances turned into a lot of the material that we used for the Kingdom of Slavinalia. So being able to like spread that love of fruits to other people has been great. But I don't know what it is about apples specifically, but I think it's just you can eat them without feeling like, oh, it's too sweet or it's too much or like anything else. I feel like there's either too much bitterness or sweetness or things. Depends on the type of apple, but you can always find an apple to suit any occasion is really how I feel about fruits. You get to try a lot of different things, but it's also interesting just like the history and cultivation of apples, I think is that part of it's really interesting to me too. And how there used to be all these different types of apples and now it's very narrowed in terms of just what types of species of apples we have, what apple varieties are available.
Do you explore the history in the Kingdom of Slavinalia or is that separate?
It's a bit separate. There's some exploration of it just in terms of how apples have moved, and it's an interesting parallel, I think, just to colonization and the trade across like global trade of apples. So apples moved as people have moved from different places. So I don't know, it's always an interesting thing. I don't think it's central to that project, but it's a point of interest for me. But that's most of agriculture too, right? Most of the things that developed in the world started with agriculture, right? Or civilization developed around agriculture, so.
And yeah, what can we plant? What can we hunt?
And they say an apple a day keeps the doctor away. So I was waiting for someone else to say it.
Okay. I just wanted you. I didn't know if it was going to turn into a joke or like a sad.
I never know if it's the dentist or the doctor.
Why do I want to keep the doctor away? I mean, God, I don't want to go to the doctor all the time. But...
Yeah, word. No, take the doctor away.
No, I don't want the doctor anywhere near me. I can deal with my own health. And I mean, there are some issues that you got to go to the doctor, sure. But
yeah,
keep that doctor away from me. Also, my mom's a doctor, so I don't have to pay for that doctor information. I can just call my mom and ask her what she thinks.
Right.
Also, you're a teacher, and teachers are supposed to be given apples. So
true.
Maybe I that's the connection.
People would give. I have gotten apples before, but I think that's just because I like apples. I'm very loud about my love of apples.
Yeah. What's your favorite fruit, LaRose?
It was too much. It's a difficult
decision. I got overexcited.
Yeah, it can be overwhelming.
Grapes. Grapes are my favorite. Yeah, I've always loved grapes. Even like as a kid, I used to like pop, like, and I say pop because I used to like swallow raisins whole just because I was like, yeah, this is fun. And then grapes are like, the juicier versions. So I don't know. I always feel like they were candy for me. All about grapes. Except I got real mad when they made cotton candy grapes.
Oh, I've seen that in a store. I haven't tried it.
I used to tutor children, and like one of my students was like, oh, you want a cotton candy grape? And I was like, oh, that's so cute. Like his mom told him it was cotton candy, so he'd eat his grapes. And then I ate it and it tastes like cotton candy, and I was very offended.
Is it a genetically modified to like
of course everything's genetically flavor? Modified nowadays.
Yeah, 100%. And it tastes like cotton candy. They did a very good job. I didn't like it.
Yeah, I haven't tried them yet, but I'm offended for you because I don't think fruit should taste like candy. And I'm glad that you considered the grapes to be candy because it's a healthier version. And yes. We all got to be healthier.
Also, Anna's like, always giving. Go ahead.
It's so sweet. Like it's really? Extremely sweet. Yeah. Which was one thing that was quite shocking to me. About when I ate that grape for the first time.
Yeah, I feel like if I want a sweet, sweet fruit, like I'll definitely go for a pineapple or a mango because like that's enough sugar. My dad's always like getting on me about how I should never juice pineapples because it's so much sugar in pineapple juice, like when you juice it fresh, that and it takes all the fiber out of it. And that's the part that helps you use the restroom. And I'm like, oh, that's why. And he also, like, my family has a huge history of diabetes, and he's like, yeah, you shouldn't do straight up pineapple juice. Like, that's just not good for anyone who has tendencies toward diabetes. Just like you shouldn't really have processed sugar, but I do that anyway.
One of my self-care things that I just like have started to put in my head is, have I had any fruit today? And then I usually have like fruit for breakfast or something. So then I say like, have I had 2 servings of fruit today? Because I think most people don't even have a serving of fruit. And I think you're supposed to have 2 or 3. Do y'all know?
Yeah, it's like
I think
3.
It's 2. Yeah, I thought it was 2 for fruit, 3 for vegetables, something like that.
It's some combination.
Yeah, something like that.
Like equal. You should have about as much fruit and vegetables, but that does not happen for many people.
I feel like for fruit, I have way more fruit than I do vegetables. I mean, I like vegetables, they're good, but like fruit's better.
Because it's good for breakfast or dessert.
Like, yeah, exactly.
You have better memories with fruit. I don't have that like good vegetable-based memories, but I think about like fruits and things that have happened in my life. They're always very nice associated memories. I was thinking of, I don't know, you were just talking about making sure you have fruits every day, Anna Rose. I just remember us having those dried mango slices when we would go out to like Bessemer Park when we were doing that summer program. Or like, just because you had brought them along so like kids would actually eat fruit in a day.
Yeah.
But I was like, oh yeah, I love these. So that's a good fruit too, dried mango slices.
Mm-hmm. Oh, totally. Yeah. Yeah, I'm really obsessed with encouraging people to eat healthier, especially kids, because I feel like kids don't have as much control over what they eat. And so when we were working with the kids at Bessemer, I would make sure to bring like healthy snacks for them. One, because I like people that have eaten because they're less cranky. Yes. And then two, because, you know, and some of them were like, oh, I've never had this before. And I'm just like, oh, babe. You haven't had dry mango? Have some more dry mango. Get the whole bag. Keep it. Just keep it. That was before we were all worried about germs. So have to figure out a
Makes sense.
We should just maybe drive around throwing out separately sealed bags
of dried mangoes
all around Chicago.
You know, I actually drive around with a box of bars.
Big bars
for homeless people. And I wanted to make sure I had like the most healthy bar that I could get, but also a bar that they would eat, because like the healthy bars that I eat, I've tried to give to homeless people and they won't take them. They're like, what is this? But so it was some experimenting, but found out the bar that they like. And plus like there's teeth issues. I learned early on living in Chicago that you can't give homeless people apples because they will just throw them at you because they can't eat them because there's teeth issues. What other self-care stuff have y'all like incorporated? And it doesn't have to be like the stereotypical self-care.
I do some me time. I have some like show playing on my iPad while I do dishes at like 10 o'clock every night. And it usually takes anywhere from like, you know, 15 to 45 minutes for me to do all the dishes in our house. But like, it allows me to have just some time that I'm allowed to watch some stupid shit and like kind of do a thing and like listen to water running and like feeling that on my skin. And that's been like really nice for me. It's a weird one, but.
Yeah, I think outside of just reading, which is always nice, I've also, I mean, I have a stationary bike in my house now, which I should use more often, but it is nice to have just that experience of, hey, I'm exercising in some way, which has never been really a priority of mine, but
is it making like the time to do it. Patheon bike or like a bike thing that you like hook up a regular bike to?
It's a Pooh Boo. I don't know. That's what it says on the speech. My partner got it, so then I just started using it. So,
well, I'm proud of you, Kev, because even though, yeah, like working out hasn't necessarily been on your radar, we are getting older and our bodies need more of what we didn't give it when we were younger.
It's hard. Yeah. I mean, I used to do a lot more dance and was more active.
Burlesque,
yeah. And when I was in the burlesque world. And so that was a great time, I think. So I didn't have to think about it as much just because it was natural to what I was doing. Mm-hmm. In my performance and every day. So sometimes it does feel like I have to, you know, justify doing this thing of like, there's no like payoff or there's no like goal in mind. I'm just biking, but I actually like doing it when I do it. So maybe I just need to set some goals. Maybe that's the takeaway. Set some goals about what you want with your self-care if you're a goal-oriented person.
Right. Are you listening to music while you're doing your bike?
Yeah.
Or are you
That's like, been good yeah. too, of like getting into a lot of different music things. Because I'll usually just set up like a radio station. I like think of a song that's like, that's going to get me active. Let's play a radio station yeah. with that. So it's kind of taking me back to things that I really liked in the past or some new music and getting motivated on that.
Well, LaRose, I know you've been working on your film, so I'm sure like working on your own work is a form of self-care.
Yeah, I feel like it's been really interesting because I feel like I can't say there's only been one thing during this entire pandemic that I've like consistently done. I feel like I've had giant waves of like, yeah, these couple months I did this thing, and then these couple months I did this thing, and then these couple months I did this thing. But I think the one thing that has stayed consistent is, yeah, I've been working on a movie. It's like this entire pandemic. So I wrote the script initially starting in like 2017, and then the pandemic hit, and then I re-edited it again. And this was like draft five. And then I decided that I was going to produce it. And then since then, honestly, it's been crazy. It's been crazy since then. I like have four other producers on board, and we're about Yay. To launch our Kickstarter that's coming in a couple weeks. And okay. we've already filmed like our teaser that we've released, and we have our website built, and like, we're about to get into the investors being like, please give me hundreds of thousands of dollars because the film is expensive. But honestly, it's been one of my biggest escapes is just like going back into that script and just like tweaking it or editing. So for me, writing has been a huge like self-care related thing for me in a way that like it never had before. Beforehand, I always wrote, I guess it always has. I've always written like journal entries and like whatnot to just kind of clear my mind, figure out what is going on. Cause me as a writer, I write to understand my world less than to share it. So it's been interesting for me taking something that I initially wrote to understand myself and my place in this world and now decide to like share that with people. So that's been exciting and horrifying and scary, but great all at the same time. So,
and you're the lead in the piece too. And are you also directing?
I am. I'm finding a co-director, but right now I'm the sole director on that. So I have four hats many hats is happening, but like, it's exciting. I'm really excited about it, honestly.
How was it to film the, you said you filmed a teaser for the Kickstarter?
Yeah. So the teaser we filmed in order to have like part of our pitch of the Kickstarter and as our proof of concept, instead of doing like 15 minute short, we just decided to just do a like, push, smack this into one. Here's what you're going to get. All right, cool. And it's
yeah, it
cheaper.
Gave me like a Dear White People vibes. I really liked it.
Yeah.
But, like with a female.
Yes, which I'm very okay with that.
I haven't had a chance to see it. So when you were filming, was it, it was the middle of the pandemic when you were filming this?
Yeah.
How was it safety wise? Did you feel safe?
Luckily, the way that I wrote it, there's a lot of individual shots. So it's like this one character and then this one character and this one character. There was only one shot that we had where we did have four women close together. But what we ended up doing was everyone had to quarantine 2 weeks before. I did it in LA instead of Chicago because a lot of my film people are out in LA. So it was weird because I flew out to LA and then I quarantined for 2 weeks and didn't see any of my friends. And so I was there, but like, no. And then our set was tiny. It was like, we had a rolling set where we had about 4 or 5 people on set at a time. We had one actor, they like did their thing, another actor, they did their thing, and we just kind of kept pushing through. So it was for the fact that it was still, so it was in September, yeah, like September of last year. Yes, 2020. Time is an illusion. Yeah. It was September of last year, and it was also, I picked a doozy of a time to film. It was also when all the like California fires were happening.
Yeah.
So yeah, it started raining ash in the middle of our shoot day.
Oh God.
Like it was kind of insane. It was
you
insane.
Use it? Were you able to use it in your film in a way?
There is one little snowflake in one of the shots that if you are paying very close attention, you can see.
Don't tell me where it is. I'm going to go watch it. And then I will try to find it. I'll text you if I find it.
Oh, special I'm excited Easter if you find egg. It. There is one shot that there was ash that was there, which was insane. Truly insane. Wow. But generally speaking, like I think because everyone on my set took COVID very seriously and like we were very precautious and we had all our PPE, we had all our wipes down, I felt very, very safe. Which was exciting because
what is your movie about? I guess I never asked that.
Yeah.
Well, so, if you watch the trailer, you would know.
I'll watch it.
I could toss the log line. So it is a Black architecture nerd's determination to win herself a man and a job before graduating from her predominantly white university takes a turn as rising racial tensions hit a little too close to home.
Yep.
So that's what it's about. Pretty much it's about like, so and that's the log line version. In the LaRose version, it's pretty much about this Black senior who's trying to figure out like where she fits in the world. And as she is about to graduate and go from her predominantly white like school into the greater world and figuring out like kind of how she feels about herself, her self-worth, her understanding of herself, her understanding of, yeah, generally where she fits both at her university, which is pretty late time to figure that out, but also in the world. So That is what Lex is about.
That's a movie I want to see.
Yeah, it's super important. And you know, Dear White People is similar. I actually went to high school with Justin Simien.
Oh, really?
And I think that he would be flattered that like it's similar, but it's also he was coming from his own personal story, I think, a lot. So it's just like very similar universal stories, but like with your twist.
Exciting. I feel like it was one of those things where I've talked to a couple people about it, and I said I've always seen like myself in media, so I've always seen the one Black person in the room of white people, but I feel like I've never gotten to know that person's perspective or know what it feels like to be them on the day-to-day in film. I mean, I know what it feels like. I've done that, but like, I've never got to see that on screen. And that was one thing that I wanted to do with this film, is to really express that point of view.
Yeah, that's so interesting, because I never felt that until I was in my 20s and moved to the mainland, because I'm originally from Hawaii, and you're in a room with people and it's a bunch of like Polynesian and Asian folks, and like a few white people are there, and a few like Black folks are there, and a few Latinx people are there. But like when I moved to Chicago, I noticed I was looking for exits, because I was just in a room of white folks and I did not see color in it. And it was very eye-opening in that way.
Yeah. And it's a very different experience, which I think like, and there's so many people who can relate to it, that I feel like it needs to be a perspective that's talked about, because it is so important to how we understand America and like what's acceptable in America and what's not acceptable in America, is understanding that point of view, honestly.
Yeah. And it's the code switching within that as well. Yeah. Like I definitely found myself code switching in rooms and not even realizing I was doing it until I walked out of the room. And I was like, oh shit, I don't say things in that way a lot of times.
Yeah. And I think me as a person, I don't code switch. I'm really bad at code switching and like being like ostracized because I couldn't code switch, or because I didn't have that ability to do that, like kind of made me an outsider, which was really interesting as well.
Just like, is that explored also in the film in any sort of way?
It is indeed.
Yes.
It is
indeed. Okay, what is your film called? Sorry.
Lex.
Lex.
Mm-hmm. It's called Lex.
All right. I might have a really dumb white person question. Is that okay?
Yes.
So if I feel like I also change like the way that I act around people in different circumstances, is that still called code switching, or is that specifically for people of color? You might not know the answer.
I'm just
curious.
I'm thinking back, because I listened to
one of our listeners
code...
will have a comment on that.
Yeah, too. Listeners, if you have an opinion, email us nothingwithoutacompany@gmail.com. I listen to the Code Switch podcast on occasion. It's an NPR podcast, and I don't recall any talk about that specifically, but I do notice that they are mostly talking with people of color and BIPOC folks.
That makes sense. So, that would be a more central experience based on culture, right? Because you're trying to translate culture across different places.
They
happen just because you're talking with one group or another group of people who are like you already.
Yeah, which kind of bounced off of Kevin, because I think the main question is like, I think the groups that you are around is the main question, like culturally, because like I'm gonna act different when I'm around my mother and her friends in comparison to like my friends, where like that's like natural, but I think it's specifically a cultural difference, like where you have to switch, where I what code switching.
I definitely start talking a little bit more in pidgin when I'm in Hawaii.
Yeah.
So that makes sense, because I'm in a completely different culture. What
do some sociological research into it just to make sure to pin it down.
Yeah.
Kev, do you feel like you have to do any like code switching if you're like more in a queer environment versus a straight environment, or like a school environment versus like a home environment?
Yeah, that's an interesting topic. But I think for me, right, I switch how I talk about certain things, or what I'm going to, like how I'm going to present an idea or something based on, okay, is this like more academic, less academic? Like what's my audience in that sense? Which I think that's just what everyone does. I wouldn't say that's code switching. But yeah, I think it probably does tie in for queerness, for LGBTQ people. That is something that happens. It's kind of what I think for me, or at least how I've experienced, is more of like what I can talk about, or what I feel comfortable talking about in certain spaces. That just by the fact of being a non-binary person, right, or being a queer person, that if you talk about your pronouns, right, you are outing yourself no matter what. So you have to measure, even subconsciously, is that worth it in this space? Do I just go with whatever default assumption someone has about me? I mean, over time, that's mattered to me less. Obviously, I think it it changes based on who you are and as you get older and more comfortable with not letting other people's perception dictate your reality. But yes, I think there's definitely spaces where I'd be more comfortable, I don't know, being queer, I guess, in this sense, because it's just not, even if I don't feel uncomfortable, that these other people who I might be communicating with aren't going to get it, right? They don't have any frame of reference, and I don't necessarily need to like sit down and explain what certain things mean to me. Or if they want to have that experience, they can go and have that experience. They can like take in queer movies, right? And just like with your movie, La Rose, right? This gives people an opportunity to go see that type of experience, right? What does it mean to be a Black person in an all-white environment, right? So like that media exists. If people do want to kind of bridge that gap, they can work on it. But it's challenging for me to know when to translate that. And I don't have to do that translation in a queer space. So yes, there is a form of code switching there, but how much does it overlap with other forms?
Yeah.
I don't know.
I was in a meeting for a grant, and of course it was like a whole bunch of white people. There was one Japanese woman, and she didn't speak, which I really wanted her to speak, but I'm sure she was feeling like, I don't know how she was feeling, but we had to describe our background because they're very into like if someone is visually impaired, they wanted everyone to describe what they looked like in their background. And I thought about it afterwards. I've described my background. I was in the room that Hannah's in now, where there's a rainbow flag in the back of her. And I said, and I described it as a gay flag. And I remember thinking later, it's a rainbow flag isn't necessarily a gay flag. I should have said rainbow flag. I consider it a gay flag, but maybe, you know, not everyone does. And I think my brain goes to gay things sometimes when they're not gay. But that's just me.
A secret reveal.
Yeah, I know.
Back there.
Flag reveal.
Yeah, just, and that's something that I've learned too about myself with this whole pandemic thing, that I knew that I've always had anxiety, but I didn't realize that it showed up in the way of having thoughts about situations that I was in that I can't step away from. Like I self-judge. I think like, oh, I should have said that a different way, or I should have said something else or done something different. Do y'all struggle with that at all? Cause I still struggle with it. I'll be up at night thinking about it. LaRose, you seem like you.
Oh yeah. Like all the time. Yeah. I think, that ruminating is really, I don't know. Sometimes it creates traps for yourself where you're like I've talked to my different coworkers about the word should a lot recently. And I was like, I think I'm slowly trying to take should out of my vocab, because I feel like that's where a lot of my anxiety lives. It's because I go, oh, well, I should have did this, or I should feel this way about this thing, or I should, instead of being like, no, this is my state. I am this, I am not this. Because I think should is a really, it's a word that we can just keep going. It's like, it's almost as troublesome as if. If this, then this. If this, then this. And I think for me, should, again, is one of those words that I'm like, ooh. So I'm slowly trying to scooch that out of my vocab.
Yeah, I feel like the if and the what if lives on the page for me. Like, that's a great thing for me to think about when I'm thinking about writing or storyline or character. Like, I love the what if. But in my real life, the what if scares me as much as the should seems to scare you in that way of, you know, I can't live in that thought process.
Yeah, I'm not as scared of what if, but I think similar to Anna Rose, I do have those feelings of like, oh, I messed up this thing or socially, or I feel bad about this thing that happened 10, 15 years ago, you know, like just this weird, very random off the cuff thing will just come back to you. And I'm like, well, why do I care about this thing from the past that I said that ultimately was not a terrible thing, but still like made me feel weird or icky or guilty for like just not being thoughtful at the time, right? I find that most when I'm like, oh, I wasn't being my most thoughtful self. What I try to do about that now is just not, this may be different from how other people view it, but I just try not to go off of my first impression of something, of a situation or information I'm getting, just because it's usually I have a very quick flip. I feel like I get presented information and I might feel a very particular way about it. And then it'll flip after I think about it for just a few minutes. I guess for like an example, this is based on Slavinalia when we were putting that show together, getting pretty close to the thing. And I won't like put anyone's name, just so I don't put anyone out there. But in the script, I mean, I can put myself out there because I wrote down everything. We have,
you are yourself.
There's this, you know, life-size, like human-sized pumpkin. That's kind of part of it. His name's Lord Pumplestin. And in the script, it kind of decides, it describes his largeness, right? Like, oh, we're going to feed this pumpkin until he's like really big and overstuffed. And like that weight is going to be a thing. And one of the actors pointed out that it could come across as fat phobic, right? Or that it's being negative towards size. And it was just something that like, at first, I guess I didn't react to it. I was just like reading this. I'm like, well, that doesn't sound right. Like, that's not what we're talking about, you know, and having defensive feelings at first, but then realizing like reading into it, reading over the script, I'm like, well, even if that's not my intention, that's not really that meaningful, right? That impact could also be harmful to someone. And I definitely don't want to harm someone with that not being the intention at all. So even though we were close to the show going up, we were able to change the script so that it wasn't aimed at the size of this pumpkin or anything about physical dimension, but more about what was happening to the world because of this pumpkin, like how him being this kind of greedy pumpkin person was affecting the world. So I don't know. I always think it's really helpful to not go on your first impression, because often for me, at least, I don't know, I find that it can either be based in defensiveness or based on affirming, you know, confirmation bias, that kind of thing. So it's always really an important thing. And then I don't have that feeling 10 or 15 years later anymore. Yeah. Oh, shit, I didn't do the right thing here.
Yeah, that's why I try to read or watch twice. Like my first watch or read is an entertainment thing. The discovering of what's happening in the world. And then the second one is, how do I take this apart so I can kind of rewrite it in a way that would work for me or whatever. So like I watch a lot of TV and film to be like, how do I write TV and film? And I read a lot of scripts to be like, how do I write that thing? Do we still need act breaks with streaming services? Like, do I really need to write an act break in my 1 hour drama pilot if I'm trying to sell it to Netflix and not ABC or wherever?
You do a lot of analyzing before putting on the page sometimes, which I try to encourage also to put on the page, because sometimes, you know, I'm married to a writer, so, and I have a lot of writer friends. So I just notice things about writers. Sometimes they procrastinate and don't want to do the writing portion.
You don't know me.
I'm not a writer. I'm not a writer, so I'm not going to tell you how to do it. I'm just, you know, I'm just observing. Sometimes get into the research mode and never really get out of it for a while.
Stop describing me.
That's it's hard okay, to know which person Anna's talking to. I feel like she's speaking to all three of us.
What?
Keep your head down, do the work.
Do you do that, LaRose? Do you do a lot of research for your writing before you do it, or are you more of a journaler and then put it on the page?
I'm more of a journal. I won't call myself a writer, which is probably bad, but I won't call myself a writer because I have so much respect for writers, because I feel like I word vomit and then I go, okay, yeah, no one needs to see this. So I'm like, so.
Oh, you wrote a film, so you are a writer.
I know. I'm trying to change that. But yeah, no, other than when I say, oh yeah, I'm going to write this thing. Yeah, no, I procrastinate. I'm in the research like part for a very long time. If I go, yeah, okay, cool, I feel this today. Do-do-do. Yeah, I'll get it down. But like, when it comes to like the discipline of writing, yeah, I procrastinate. So,
unless you're doing something like a 24-hour fest where you're like, well, I have to get this done.
Exactly. You have a choice.
Then it's very easy.
So it sounds to me like you might want to write for a 24-hour fest, Loros, next time we do it. Although we were thinking about having you direct.
So. Yeah,
because it's so like, multi-talented.
See, well, I also just wanted to try directing on Zoom because I feel like it's so specific. Mm-hmm. And like honestly, like it's been really cool watching people direct on Zoom because people's like directorial styles still come through on Zoom, which is really cool. And one thing that I've noticed, like as I've watched different people's shows throughout the pandemic, it's really cool, honestly, to still see that. Like that specificity in a new form of art, really.
Yeah, it feels like a director almost has to have a different type of vision, but still you have to have a vision as a director or else it's a flat screen feeling. Yeah,
and you have to drop a lot of what you expect out of even like a film or stage medium, right? It's like,
yeah,
I have to think about what it's like to have a conversation with someone or like to have this type of relationship, right? Where I'm speaking to the screen and having that same type of, you know, limited intimacy, but right, still trying to make that moment intimate, which is what I found with doing Slavinalia as well. And I feel like I have the opposite feeling of like, I don't like to say I'm a director, even at times when I'm like, oh, I actually am directing. I am giving direction to this process, but that's different from what a director does. So I don't know. I feel you there. Like, I don't want to take on this name or this title, but you are a writer. You're a writer.
True. This is true.
Yeah, Kev, The Kingdom of Slavinalia was a stage play that you then kind of reformatted into a Zoom performance, right? Yeah. How was that process for you?
It was great. I liked having the opportunity to do it because I think we are able to pull off even more of the intention of the piece by having these separate tours because it was an immersive piece where the audience is meant to go on four separate tours and still kind of work collaboratively within their groups to come together and make some decision about what happens in this made up country. Do they want to overcome the capitalism and colonialism of this place, or will they leave well enough alone? And you can get all of the groups together on that and these smaller things in the stage production. And ultimately, I think that'd be really fun to do in a real world setting, but it would take a lot of space and scenic design. And you can do all that scenic design, or you can approximate what you want so much easier, obviously, in this realm, in the Zoom realm or in the virtual theater realm. And so there's a lot of things that I still want to work on, but it did help, I think, having this platform and kind of being forced, obviously, into using this platform. It helped to map out exactly what that looks like. So even though it was a full real production that I really was excited about for its own thing, it also gave a lot of learning for like, how do you translate that into a real world space? Maybe like I can look back at it and what happened in the show as a diagram, right? Of how would I produce this in the future? How would I go about planning it? So yeah, it's been really cool to look more at immersive work and how that happens in this space, right? And how it doesn't have to go away, right? I think obviously a lot of people have that conversation right now of like, oh, I can't wait for theater to come back. And it's like, well, it didn't go anywhere. It just went online and it helps people for it to be online, right? For it to be accessible, for it to be accessible by money, for it to be accessible by ability. Right. So it's just really important to, I don't know, since we're talking on a Zoom and people are hearing this in a virtual way, keep that in mind, maybe.
Theater didn't go support nowhere.
Court theater, it's still here. You don't need to wait for Broadway or your local playhouses to open up to support theater and theater artists.
Yeah. LaRose, do you always have like five things going on. Do you have anything you want to shout out to?
Can I shout out two things? Okay. My sketch comedy troupe that I mentioned, Trifecta Comedy, we are doing like monthly Twitch comedic like sketches. So we are going live on Twitch. Our next one is the 19th, called The Cure. And so we table read a bunch of our sketches and play games and whatnot. So that's a big one. It's a trifecta comedy. And then the other one is my movie. So yeah, Lex the movie. The best thing is to follow us on Instagram and all of our updates are there. But those are the main two things that are left. It's two things that I'm doing.
Awesome. Do you have anything you want to shout out to?
I don't have any specific project coming up at this moment. I mean, I guess besides things that we're doing, I'm the literary manager with Nothing Without a Company. So I have Nothing Without a Company things. But outside of that, I also work on the Museum of Unnatural History, which is munchicago.org, munchicago.org. So if people just want to see kind of what the different projects I've gone into there are, which also includes Kingdom of Slovenalia. They can look me up there.
Oh, well, our time is up. So thank you all for joining us today on As It Is Like It Was. I am Hannah E.E. Epstein, and you can find me on Instagram at hcat5.
And I'm Anna Rose E.E. Epstein, and you can find me on Instagram at Anna Rose I.I. Epstein, or my social justice page, True Social Equity in Cannabis, on Instagram. And LaRose, how can the people find you?
You can find me also on Instagram at lalarose.com. So, .com. What? That's not right. 05. So it's LALAROSE 05. LalaRose 05 is my Instagram.
Nice. Kevin, how can the people find you?
If they want to find Instagram, it is Unnatural Chicago, all one word.
Well, thank you so much to our guests, LaRose Washington and Kevin Sparrow. You, our audience, can support As It Is Like It Was by donating at nothingwithoutacompany.org. Share the podcast with your friends and family and subscribe, follow, and like us on the socials.
And that's the lowdown.